I'm not a scientist, but I think scientifically. So I'm actually trying to devise the perfect suicide letter to make sure that my family doesn't blame themselves. So I'm trying to write it in the right way.
Hey there, my name is Sean, and this is Suicide Noted. On this podcast, I talk with suicide attempt survivors so that we can hear their stories. Every year around the world, millions of people try to take their own lives, and we almost never talk about it. We certainly don't talk about it enough, and when we do talk about it, many of us, including me, we are not very good at it. So, one of my goals with this podcast is to have more conversations, and hopefully better conversations, with attempt survivors, in large part to help more people in more places hopefully feel a little less shitty and a little less alone. Now, if you are a suicide attempt survivor and you'd like to talk, please reach out. hello@suicidenoted.com. You can also reach us on Facebook or X at Suicide Noted. And if you'd like to learn more about this podcast, including our membership, you can check the show notes. There's all kinds of cool stuff in there, so check that out. I want to share with you something that happened last week. I have been for some time now playing with the idea of changing the logo. So what I did was went on ChatGPT just for shits and giggles. They have this photo generator or logo generator, and I put some prompts in, colors and fonts, and then in quotes, Suicide Noted, and then a tagline. And what I got back was not an image or a photo or a logo. And what ChatGPT returned was something like, we can't do that. We don't support that idea or that word or something like that. I'm not looking at ChatGPT right now, but nonetheless, it just reminds me one more space in which you can't even say the damn word. Well, on this podcast, as the title suggests, as the conversations do too, we say the word, and we say it fairly often, and I don't hold back. So please take that into account before you listen or as you listen, but I do hope you listen because there is so much to learn. Today, I am talking with Lucy. Lucy lives in the sky, and she is a suicide attempt survivor. Hey, Lucy.
Can't hear you. It's 2024 already. Get your shit together.
This is the podcast for people who don't have their shit together. Come on.
Holy shit. I am going to change the tagline of this podcast, or at least add to it, the podcast for people who don't have their shit together.
Mm-hmm. Can't you like trademark those? You can trademark those, right? Remember in a podcast, you mentioned that in one of the podcasts that you wanted to trademark something.
I like to believe I'm pretty damn good at having conversations with people about suicide. I don't do much else very well.
Mm-hmm.
So when you ask me about business shit or trademarks and copyrights, I don't know what the fuck you're talking. I am just a simple bald man at an ugly kitchen table, displaced New Yorker in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, who refused to wear sleeves. Are you on the same page with me in the next night?
Even though I'm a woman, I'm having trouble with the bald shit also, though. The women in my family have had some problems with that also. So, and I'm not wearing sleeves also.
I feel like that might be part of our conversation. Hair issues, sleeve issues. Learning all of this now, that was not in your email when you reached out. It was a very simple email. It was not that long ago. I'm paraphrasing, but it was essentially, I'm not a suicide attempt survivor. However, I am planning ...
Yes.
And just so we're clear, you mean planning to end your life?
Yes.
So when this comes out in ballpark 10 weeks, will you be alive?
I'm planning by the end of the year. I do not want to be alive by January 1st. So I'm planning by the end of the year.
Why the end of the year? Why January 1st is the cutoff date?
I do not want to go through another new year. I have a lot of autoimmune diseases, and it's really painful in the cold weather. The type of autoimmune diseases I have, I get frostbite no matter what I do, no matter how warmly I dress. It's kind of hard. I don't want to go into the gory details, but it affects me really bad. And the minute I go outside, it's really painful and I just don't want to deal with it anymore. I just know that as soon as the cold weather hits, I'm just going to want to stay in bed all winter long. I just don't want to deal with it anymore.
How old are you?
I'm 54.
And Lucy, you live in the sky.
No diamonds. Not here, not today. Maybe not even until midnight, December 31st. Do you think, Lucy, that there is a risk in me talking with you? And by the way, we are going to talk. And you specifically, definitively having a plan and me just having this conversation with you and it going out to the world and I leave it at that. Does this conversation make it more likely you're going to end your life?
No, not at all. First of all, you're one of the first conversation. I really was amazed when I remember I heard, I think it was Ryan, Ohio.
Yeah, it's early, really early.
I was so amazed when I heard him. He had the same idea as I do. I mean, idea, that sounds like a bad phrasing of how I'm saying it, but he planned to take his life also. Unlike me, he had attempted before.
Right.
He very calmly discussed, he said, I don't know when. I thought I was the only one who, I mean, obviously there are a lot of people, but approaching it as calmly. I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of people just not talking about it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
There's the man who wrote the 1,905 page suicide letter. I just read a book of suicide, last suicide notes. I mean, I was getting ideas from it because I'm planning my suicide note already. My mind is, I have the mind of a scientist. I'm not a scientist, but I think scientifically. So I'm actually trying to devise the perfect suicide letter. That's not to make sure that my family doesn't blame themselves. So I'm trying to write it in the right way. So I'm looking at other suicide notes to see how they wrote it. Like I was looking at Virginia Woolf's the other day. And I'm going to look at the one that the man who wrote the 1,900. I mean, his was philosophical. I'm not going to read the whole thing. But
does anybody know that you will not be alive then?
No, no. I might tell, I'm probably going to tell one person.
You know that it's possible people will hear that.
Yeah, but no one is going to, I don't think anybody except the one person that I'm going to tell will hear this podcast.
When those people in your life, like your family that you mentioned,
yeah,
learn of your death, and I'm asking you to speculate, given what you've gone through, given what you've shared with them, all they know about you, do you think they, though I realize there's more than one person, I think, will they be surprised?
At first, but eventually, I'm trying to prepare them. I'm very slowly trying to prepare them. I mean, I think I've been preparing them my whole life.
What do you mean?
I've had depression my whole life. It's actually amazing. I haven't tried before. You know, I've gone through spells. Like, I think they'll be surprised, but after a while, I think it will just be a logical conclusion. It's kind of like having cancer your whole life, kind of brief moments of remission, and then you just eventually die of it. You know, I think it's just kind of like I'm in stage 4 cancer. I've tried all the treatments and there's just really no cure. Some people have cancer and they're able to have a full cure of the cancer. Some people, you know, have cancer and then they struggle with it throughout their life. And then they go through it and they have remission and they have recurrence. And but they more or less lead a, you know, a long, healthy life. And then there's other people who, you know, they have pancreatic cancer and bad prognosis, stage 4 cancer, and they eventually die of it. And that's me. You know, there's really nothing you can do.
When you say all that, are you saying like, that's Lucy, that's the depression, that's the autoimmune, all of the above?
It's just, I've had a depression and then I just keep getting more and more autoimmune diseases and that just adds to it.
Do they have names?
Yeah, well, I just have lupus and Raynaud's disease and then I get Sjögren syndrome and I'm sure I'll get rheumatoid arthritis soon. And, you know, once you get one, they just kind of add on and you get the others and because of them, I'm not able to work enough to support myself. And I'm going to use the cliche, I'm a burden on my family.
Cliche for a reason, I suppose.
I feel like, you know, they're careful not to say I'm a burden, but I know deep down I am. And I feel like after they get over the initial shock, I think overall they'll be better off. They would never say it, but deep down, you know, I think they would never let themselves feel it, but
I think I'd be a release for them.
Sometimes when I hear that about people, like their auto response is like, you're not a burden. I'm like, is that really true? You're probably right. Deep down, I might not be right, of course, but deep down, there's probably something that is burdensome when you're dealing with a relative who has these problems. I mean, I feel the same way about me with parts of my family, right?
Yeah.
I don't think they've ever used that word with me. If I could read their minds.
I don't see what joy I give to them. Who wants someone who's depressed all the time? I'd rather the money that they have to use to help me support myself, I'd rather that money go to their grandkids.
When and why did you find this podcast?
Oh, well, just like most people did. I just searched for suicide on Spotify. Easy, you know, just like most of your, I think most of your listeners.
Yeah, I mean, something like that, right? But was it because you were looking for ways, looking for solace, looking for something?
Not just solace, you know, I wasn't looking for ways. You know, I have pretty much researched ways. I'm just scared. I don't want my, you know, my mother to blame herself, but there's really no way to accidentally make it look like an accident. They can, from what I've researched, they can find out, you know, even if you try to make it look like a car accident, they're so sophisticated with accident reconstruction. The worst thing would be if you make it look like an accident and you don't succeed and you're paralyzed and then you're even more of a burden. That would be my worst fear.
Well, that idea was one of the reasons, and I don't know how many episodes you've listened to, one of the reasons why I started asking the pink and purple pill question, because it takes out. Do you know the pink and purple pill question?
No, I haven't listened to every episode.
Oh, no, it's totally fine. And it's more recent. I'm going to ask that question right now, even though I usually wait towards the end. I give you a pill. I, for some reason, just decided to make it pink and purple. When you take this pill, you go to bed, you die peacefully in your sleep, and nobody knows it's a suicide. And the reason I ask that question is, so I'm taking out any risk that it won't work, any problems you might have associated, like you mentioned, you know, being in a wheelchair forever, something getting paralyzed, and there's no pain. So all that's taken out. I'm trying to really like hone in on, do you want to die? And would you take that pill now? Would you, I'd magically give it to you over Zoom. Would you take it right now? Would you save it? Or would you just discard it?
I would save it and wait until I'm ready.
What would that day be like? The day of.
Jeez, it would be the day that I could get my note together. I would just have everything ready. I just wouldn't want to leave everything to them. I would try to get the house sold, the selling of the house underway somewhat, and get my affairs in order. So I wouldn't, you know, leave everything for them to do. I wouldn't want to do it right away with everything in disarray. Well, it's a purple pill. So that's the pink pill, right?
It's one pill. And in my mind, half of it's pink and half of it's purple.
Oh, okay. So it's not like the red and the blue. It's not a choice of something.
That's the Matrix.
Okay, you're right. So I'm saying it's not a choice. It's just one pill. Okay.
I just want to make sure you know you're on the Suicide Noted podcast, not in the Matrix movie.
What I'm looking for is exactly the pink pill. That's exactly what I'm looking for. Something like that.
Did you find anything?
That's pretty much my plan because I have enough pills to do it. But I'm just scared. It's not going to work, but I pretty much have enough to do it.
So the other question, and then I want to hear more about your life as much as you'd like to share. I want to know why you wanted to talk with me and thereby whoever listens to this will also hear this conversation.
I feel kind of guilty. I guess I should clarify something. I come from a Jewish family, so I feel guilty about everything. And I think anybody who's Jewish is probably laughing right now because I'll understand. I'm not religious at all. I don't believe in anything. I'm an atheist, so Jewish culturally. I hear family of suicide victims saying, oh, if she or he had just talked to us, we would have understood. And I'm just thinking, if I go right now to my family and I say, I'm feeling suicidal, The first thing my mother would say, and I love my mother to death and she loves me, but she would say, do you know how this makes me feel? And it would make me feel 10 times worse. It would make me want to just take the pink pill right now. So there's no way for me to talk to anybody about it. You know, I can't go to my family about it. I don't really see a way out. I don't see in my psychiatrist, again, I don't like to use cliches, but the definition of insanity is to keep doing the same thing and expecting a different outcome. She just keeps throwing pills at me and they seem, I don't know if maybe your listeners will understand, but I've had some success with some medications, but they all stop working after a while. and the last medication. And I told her, I said, you can start me on this new medication. I said, but I guarantee you it might work for a year. It might work for 6 months, but it's going to stop working for no reason at all. Sure enough, after 6 months, I just fell off a cliff. There's just nothing that works. I don't see the point in just keep doing the same thing. I don't see what else I can do.
I don't know how to ask this question. Not that I'm hesitant to. I have to try to find the right words. How does it feel for you, obviously, to know that at some point relatively soon, you will not be alive?
Relief. The only thing that really gives me relief is sleeping. You know, I try to do as much work as I can, but I just hate waking up every day. I always think every day, wouldn't it be great to just take the pills now and just end it right now, just to sleep and never have to wake up, never have to deal with this anymore. It would just be so amazing. You know, I just know that I can't do it until I get my affairs in order. And it's just kind of strange how it seems it's such an irrational act, but I'm applying I'm applying rationality to it. Like, I'm researching the best way to write the suicide note. I'm trying to phrase it, and as I told you before, I'm trying to phrase it in a way where I don't make anybody feel bad. I'm kind of obsessing about how to phrase it where I try to explain as best I can why I'm doing it. I'm trying to leave everything in the best way so that it's the less burdensome for everybody. So I'm trying to apply kind of a veneer of rationality to this very irrational act.
Is it an irrational act?
You know, I guess it isn't. Have you ever heard how, let me give you an analogy. Let's talk about entrepreneurs. I'm making an analogy here. Entrepreneurs are irrational because 99% of businesses fail. And if they were rational, they would never try to start a business because they would look at the statistics and say, this is never going to succeed. So most people have to be a little irrational in life, because if you look at life, you're like, oh, we're all going to die. So why should we even bother? So they say that people who are depressed, it's because they see life more rationally than normal people. People who are depressed, they say, are the ones who see things more clearly.
Yeah, that's right.
I think I'm seeing things perhaps a little more clearly, and, you know, what's the point? So I feel, okay, I really am a burden. I want to lift this burden. I don't believe in an afterlife. I'm suffering. I just want to be nothing. You know, if I end everything, then I won't feel anything and I won't be a burden. And that will be better than, basically, zero is better than negative. You want to use a mathematical term. So
for the math people out there. So is this conversation we're having, I imagine, kind of a secret, or like just nobody knows?
No, I'm going to tell my friend. I'm going to tell one friend about it. I will be alive until at least November.
You just bumped up your suicide plans within this conversation. We've only been, I know it's correlation and not causation.
I'll tell you something. I had planned to end it last November 1st. There was a reason, because I told you I had never attempted before, but I had planned last November 1st. I didn't go through with it. I wish I had.
What was the reason?
There was some surgery I needed. It was very expensive. And it wasn't covered by insurance. And I didn't want my parents to pay for it. And they insisted on it. I just didn't want them to spend the money on me. And so I thought this was a good time to end it. I'm just mad at myself for not going through with it.
Was that pills?
I always have a stash of pills I could take anytime.
But was that your method then?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
I have pills for anxiety. I mean, I've got like a month's supply. I'm sure that would do it. I just have to make sure that they stay down, and I pretty much have an iron stomach, so I'm sure they would.
I just don't know how painful it is.
The ones I have, I think I would just stop breathing. I think that's it. I'm pretty sure. I've done the research, and I think I would just take them and I'd just stop breathing. You know, I just go to sleep and that would be it.
Do you remember the first time you thought about ending your life?
I mean, I think it was when I was about 19. It wasn't like this. I mean, I think about it every minute of every day now. I think it just started creeping in constantly for the past, I don't know, 2 years. I think it's just as I get diagnosed with more and more autoimmune diseases. And these are things that just It's not like having cancer where you can point to a tumor and just say, these are just things where you're just tired all the time, where, you know, inflammation, where they just say, oh, you just got to live with it. And, you know, you just feel miserable. And why deal with it? Just, you know, if you don't want to deal with it, just end it. You know, I mean, I honestly really wish I lived in the Netherlands or, you know, Belgium. They have very expansive euthanasia laws. I think that with my, you know, long-term major depression, I think that I would be granted dispensation for euthanasia. I don't think I could go there as an American citizen. They wouldn't allow me, you know, but as a Dutch citizen, I would.
Not sure how that works. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lucy, do you know, I said earlier that I'm not good at many things, right? I said with pride that I do think I'm pretty good at this.
Mm-hmm.
There will be people that disagree. Fuck them. Also, I happen to be, and you might know this from having listened to the podcast, I happen to be a gifted memoir title creator for other people. Not myself, probably top five in the world for other people. I'm just saying I'm that good. You get the final say, of course.
Okay.
Every minute of every day. I really want you to think about that as a possibility.
Okay.
I can tell you don't love it.
Every minute of every day.
Well, you said it. I think about suicide or ending my life. Did you not? Did you say that every minute?
It is. It's constant.
Look, if you want to fire me, that's fine.
No, but you're right. Because, I mean, this is sick. I mean, I was just cutting some vegetables thinking I should not be handling a knife.
Wait, was this like an hour before we talked?
This was earlier in the day. And I was thinking I was cutting the knife and I was looking at my wrists. And I'm thinking, I should not be handling a knife. I was saying to myself, why don't you just do it? And I said, no, I'm too much of a coward to do it. It's at the point where, you know, people say you're a coward if you commit suicide. And I'm thinking I'm a coward if I don't, because I'm a burden and I should get rid of myself. I feel myself as cowardly not to commit suicide.
You're an atheist?
Yes.
So Lucy in the sky won't be in the sky.
My atoms will. I will be in the ether. I might be in the diamonds. Carbon.
This is turning into a different podcast and I don't know it. All right. I mean, I'm down for all those possibilities for sure. I just hope wherever you are, you're not in pain anymore.
That's what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping for nothingness. Very zen. Very zen, I guess.
Are you, when's your birthday?
May 18th.
So you're not making it?
No. You know, this birthday, it was just the worst. It just gets worse and worse each year.
You ever get like an official diagnosis you agree with? So you mentioned depression and the various autoimmune disorders or diseases.
It's pretty much just been the same. It's just, you know, it's kind of like I've just resigned myself. You know, I do agree with borderline personality disorder. I think because of that, I avoid a lot of things. But I think it really, depression is really what is the major driver of my decision. I just think that no matter what therapy or drugs or anything, I just think, again, I think it's just like having certain cancer. You just can't recover. I don't think that there's anything I can do to really recover from it. It's kind of like, as I said before, it's like the difference between having stage one cancer and having stage four cancer. I have stage four cancer.
Staying within the realm of reality, is there anything that can happen that would change your mind? Like, I'm not asking you to say, yeah, well, if I grew a pair of wings and I could fly around the world, well, that's not going to happen, right? So real stuff, would anything change your mind? I'm not going to try to change your mind. That's not how I roll, but I'm just curious.
I don't think so. It's so hard to just exist. It's not my surroundings. My surroundings have nothing to do. My external environment has nothing to do with how I feel. It's all inside me. So it would have to be something inside me that changes. And I can't think of anything that would do that.
If somehow tomorrow you woke up and all your autoimmune conditions were gone, would the depression also be potentially what led you to suicide in December? Like, I don't know if you can parse that out so neatly, but
I don't think so. I think if I woke up and the depression was gone, then that would be it. I could handle the autoimmune.
I think it's the depression that's really the problem. I can handle everything else. The main thing is the feeling of worthlessness, you know, the burden.
And you'd say when you first, was it that you first were depressed or you first thought about suicide? Was it 19?
I mean, I remember being depressed when I was 5 years old. I was born, again, I was born with depression.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always been depressed. I think I remember my first thinking of suicide when I was 19, you know, not like having a plan or anything, but not really, again, thinking of it until really starting again 2 years ago. I mean, I've had brief moments of remission, but now it's just, I feel like really at this point, there's really nothing more to do. I think, again, you know how I told you again, people with depression looking clearly. I'm looking clearly. I'm 54. What else is going to happen with my life? I don't have children. It's okay. I never wanted them. I don't have regrets about that. I'm not married. Not really regret about that. What's going to happen? I'm going to get older and older. And I'm just looking at that. What kind of life is this? I'm unable to do a lot of things. Why should I prolong it? What's the point? You know, people don't think about this. I'm depressed, so I'm thinking about it. You know, and I just look at older people. What's the point? I'm not deriving any joy from this. So why should I do this? And I was reading the last suicide notes, you know, George Eastman, Kodak, his suicide note just said, work's done. You know, why linger on? I feel like I have nothing more to contribute.
Well, I just, for what it's worth, you're certainly contributing to this podcast. I mean, I appreciate that. I am curious how you might characterize, and for some reason, I'm dividing it into like up to 19 years old, and then from like 19 to today.
Here's the one thing. I feel really, again, guilt is a very big part of my life because of my upbringing. One of the things that I feel bad about is that when I'm depressed, I try to shake myself out of it by looking at people who are less fortunate than me. You know, I say, oh my gosh, I could be one of those real, you know, I could be one of those poor people in Gaza or refugee in Gaza. I could be a person who's a victim of sex trafficking. And then I feel guilty because I still feel depressed.
I think, well, that is an interesting exercise, and I've certainly tried it myself. I actually don't think it's effective, and I'm wondering if there's research about it, because, I mean, if it works for somebody, of course, do it, to say I'm more fortunate than a small boy in sub-Saharan Africa. Like, I just wonder, like, I hear people talk about that, and I'm like, I understand, but I don't know. Anyway.
The reason why is that I was, and this is very good, because this is very borderline personality disorder. I was very much, to 19, your stereotypical smart geek, overprotected child. No one wanted to be my friend because I was a geek. And then I went to college and I went wild, overdid it, got depressed. You know, I just kind of like went from one extreme to the other, as a lot of people with borderline personality disorder do. You know, instead of being studious, you know, I never really got into drugs and alcohol, you know, when I was got into partying and men and a little bit of craziness. So I went over the edge, and that's kind of like why I, you know, when 19, I got a little bit suicidal. And then when I was kind of that craziness persisted throughout my 20s, then I was okay, like a little bit of stability in my 30s. But I always had got hit by the depression. It really hurt, you know, building a career or anything. It's hard to point to anything. And again, one of the things that really makes me, again, feel guilty is that I've never really had any, you know, a lot of your interviewees had, you know, suffer from abuse or had a traumatic event. And I never really had that. So I don't feel like I deserve any sympathy because I never really had anything traumatic happen to me. I just was born with this terrible depression.
I don't know if this is the kind of thing that fits into this podcast, so I might nix it. I'm weird. I don't actually try to make people feel good. It's like, I just want to hear what you have to say and try to facilitate.
Sure.
I'm not make you feel bad. I'm not going to make you feel good. Like, I'm not here to like be like, you're amazing. You're
provocateur.
That's it. But fascinating to me that you said, not so much this person had this trauma and I didn't, so I feel this way about that, like fill in the blank, guilty or whatever the word is. And you followed it up by saying, and I was born with depression. And I'm thinking to myself, are you not seeing what I'm hearing? Do you not hear or see what I see? Trauma. Maybe a different flavor of trauma, if we can use that sort of word, but like, whoa. And it's the fascinating thing, and I'm going to start to sound like a psycho babbler, because I do the same fucking thing. It's like, I can see stuff that you say. I'm like, whoa, but you don't see it, and vice versa, right? As like humans. This is part of the struggle. This is part of being human or depressed or... Anyway, you may totally disagree with me, but I'm like...
Oh, yeah. No, I do.
Fucking being born with depression, and then you dealing with depression for 5+ decades. If the audience can see me right now, I'm making weird, funny, confusing faces.
No, you're right. Because I always say, look, you know, you're not to blame. I go, you are to blame for the terrible genes you gave.
No, genetics matter.
You're right. I actually work for a company. that does personalized genomics research. So I should know that.
You work for 23andMe?
No. It's another small company. So
did you start writing the suicide note?
You want to hear something sick?
I probably won't think it's sick, but sure.
I actually was reading other suicide notes and I highlighted parts of them that I wanted to
write. Well, I'm going to ask you a question here about the note, even though you haven't started it, but you've done the prepping or the research.
Right.
What do you think the first and or last line will be?
First line is, it's not your fault.
Done. Got it.
No, the first line is, please forgive me. Definitely.
And this is like one note for everyone or like individual notes?
No, one note for everyone.
All right. I'm going to get weird here and you're going to think I'm sick.
You've been weird the whole time. So please.
Are you going to write it out? Type it out?
Type.
Like a typewriter or a computer?
Computer.
How many pages do you think it'll be?
It's not going to be that long.
Oh, it's not like that 1900 page?
No, I'm going to take a look at that tonight.
You know, the whole thing, if like I had more time, I'd write you a shorter letter. 2 pages is short. That's hard.
I'm going to say maybe 3. The first line is, please forgive me. And the last line is going to be, I love you. That's easy.
And somewhere in there, it's not your fault.
The first line is, please forgive me. It's not your fault. I'm going to talk about just the pain is intense. I know that you don't think I'm a burden, but after a few weeks or months, you will realize this is the best for everyone. And please know that I'm not suffering now. Definitely have to put a note about Bluebell in there. Bluebell has to be taken care of. Bluebell has to be taken care of by my sister, my cat.
Who is Bluebell?
My cat.
Nobody knows that until you tell us.
I know that my sister will take care of her. So
where is Bluebell right now?
She is on her throne in my attic. My attic is like a spa for cats. I want her life. So
you want Bluebell's life? If you called right now, would she come? That's more of a dog thing, right?
She comes.
I want to see Bluebell before we leave.
Oh, she's very shy.
Tell her you're talking to a famous man. See if she
comes. Oh, you know something? I think she's outside.
No worries, Bluebell. You have to make your choices, and so do I. What are your days like?
I think part of it, too, is I spend too much time alone because I work from home. I try to get out and do a little bit. Unfortunately, I'm just so tired because of all my... I sound like an old woman complaining. I hate it. I don't really get out a lot, and I rest, and you know, that's pretty much it. Don't get out. You know, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
How did you end up in North Carolina?
I murdered somebody up in New York. I was running from the law and they still haven't caught me.
What part of New York are you from?
I'm from Long Island. I just said I murdered someone and I'm on the run and you're asking me which part of New York?
I know you're full of shit. How did you end up in North Carolina?
I was ready to leave New York because I had my own health problems. And it was, you know, it was just too much and too expensive and whatever else. And I had some family down here. I asked the damn questions here, Lucy. Now you can ask me anything you want. What else you got?
How did you end up making this podcast about us suicidal folks here? Are you adjacent to us?
I joke, like, I don't need to be one of you to run the... I'm not going to try to end my life to make me qualified to do this, you know? Not that anyone suggested I should. No, I'm definitely adjacent. My best friend killed himself. And then years went by and I dealt with all my stuff. I cannot tell you exactly. I just kept hearing a lot of bullshit. I mean, if I'm really being frank, because it's going to sound perhaps, what's the word? Hubris? Is that the right word? Like, nobody was having good conversations about this stuff. Mm-hmm. They weren't honest or they weren't good. And I was just like, I want to do this. It's important. the stakes are high. Nobody's doing it. I had this sort of vision of how I wanted it done, which seems to have been working, you know? And then I took a while to figure out all the tech shit. And then I just did it, sat my ass down. Just felt like an important group of humans to be talking to, because when you're talking about suicide, you're talking about everything. Everything in someone's life can come up. If I had a pod, you know, so it's fascinating. Other than your cat and your plants, and you do have a lovely garden, what helps you get through the day? I'm making the assumption those two things help you.
I try to lose myself in intellectual stuff. I'm a scientist. My mind is. So I try to find something in what I'm editing, and I try to lose myself in that. You know, for example, if I'm editing about a particular condition, I try to lose myself in that intellectual theory or strain or a medical condition. That's the kind of thing that drives me. I like stimulating conversations. I do have a few friends. The friend that I'm going to tell about this, and she's into that, and she's into stimulating conversation. So, you know, the type of stuff like I'm talking to you about, you know, I can talk to her about, and that's when I can lose myself in that. I don't really have that many people that I can talk about that with. You know, I can't talk really deep stuff with my family. My sister, I'm kind of estranged from, not formally estranged from. She really just doesn't have time for me. You know, she makes that clear.
You said you can't talk to certain people about deep stuff. I'm like, this isn't just deep stuff. This is like life and death stuff.
Right. I not even close to this. I just mean, you know, my family, they pretty much don't want to hear anything unless it's good.
God, that pisses me off.
Unless you have good news, don't bother.
Right.
You know, like my mother just texted me, how you doing? I'm just going to write, great. If I wrote not so good, I don't even want to bother, you know.
That's why when people ask me that question, I try to respond with colors and flavors and textures instead of words. Those are words, but I'll be like, you know, beige rhombus. And it's partially to annoy them. But more often I'm like, yeah, I don't have the words. So I'll just do other things. Oh, by the way, this is a great time to remind any of our listeners, donate to the fucking cause. We need your Jesus. It's like pulling teeth. If you're not clear what the cause is, it's the podcast and I run it. And it's a lot of work. And help me, I can do more of it. It's the same thing with your memoir. You didn't necessarily love it, but it's, you know,
every minute of every day.
Ideas beget ideas here, am I right? So, sure, we got your memoir title, we got your note before you die, we've got this merch stuff. We're creative wizards here. So, I'm guessing if you are planning your death by no later than January 1, you're not in therapy.
I hate therapy. I hate it. I go there, I have nothing to talk about. I have no trauma to talk about. What do I say? I'm depressed and I have no reason why. I just feel miserable. I feel worthless. I sit there. It's like pulling teeth. What am I going to say?
It's my impression, and I've been in therapy, that it's a conversation. It's not like you have to go there and monologue for 45 minutes. No?
I hate therapy. I don't feel like I'm worth therapy. I think therapy's for people who have trauma. I don't know. My psychiatrist wants me to go. I don't know what to talk about.
My brain was going to people that are planning and are so intent on doing it and are very serious about it. There's no reason to go to therapy. Like, why?
That's my thought.
And you hate it. So like, well, you'll never go. That makes total sense. So another guess, I'm often wrong. I'm guessing you take meds just to feel a little less shitty.
I have to take meds because I have OCD, terrible OCD. If I didn't take the meds, my OCD would be terrible.
What would that be like when it's bad?
I would be reading and rereading and rereading and rereading. I wouldn't be able to get any work done. And other weird things would emerge with my OCD. I've had that since childhood, too. I remember being born with that also. I would do weird things again and again and again and again.
In dealing with your depression in the various ways one tries to deal with it, whether it's formally or informally, did you ever, by choice or perhaps not, spend any time in a psych unit of any kind?
I did some intensive outpatient therapy. Basically, you sit in a room with a bunch of people for half the day and they talk.
Right.
I don't even remember any of it because I was falling asleep half the time. It was complete bullshit. people with every kind of disorder had nothing to do with me. You have the same experience?
Yeah, well, it's not uncommon. I'm sure there are plenty of exceptions where they sort of clump everyone together and they're like, yeah, talk about it.
I don't remember any of it. It was just so unremarkable. So
I'm going to ask you a question I don't think I've ever asked anybody. No idea why I'm asking.
Go ahead.
What's the happiest memory of your life?
Oh my gosh, you're going to laugh. I remember winning a dance contest. I remember winning a dance contest and I was so happy.
How old were you?
Oh gosh, I was like in my early 30s.
What kind of dance?
I'm not into Jewish stuff, but it happened to be a Jewish dance contest.
Well, it's like you're kind of into it. Wait, where was this? Was this in New York?
This was in South Florida. This is Jewish.
Oh, South Florida. That would have been about 20 plus years ago.
Yeah. Yep.
Do you think you deserved to win?
I was a damn good dancer. I sure as hell did. You had to shake your ass.
A lot of ass shaking?
I did a lot of Latin dancing, so I knew how to dance. I didn't really have that much competition.
How many people were in this competition?
There was like 20 people.
And when your name was announced, it felt good.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I did say the happiest moment of your life, so I'd imagine.
Oh, yeah. It was really great.
And the idea that your favorite or happiest memory, I should say, is winning a dance competition. That's cool.
I don't know why I thought of it. I think it was just because I looked good then. And I missed dancing and being able to, you know, when I was in good health and being able to do those kind of things. And it was just fun. You never asked anybody that?
How many episodes, more or less, have you heard?
Oh, God. I've listened to maybe about 20.
Have you ever heard me ask the question, what's your happiest memory?
No.
Not saying I'm averse to those kinds of questions. I just don't recall it ever coming up.
I do recall you do like to do the memoir thing, though. I remember that. So.
It's not even that I like it, Lucy. It's a calling. I have no choice. When you have been bestowed
with a gift
at such a high level, it would be such a gross and frankly, I don't even have the words for the kind of disservice I would be offering people or not offering them if I didn't do.
You would be a disservice to the gods.
Of course I'm going to do it. I just happened to find the perfect vehicle in which to do this work. Maybe people will finally start to realize the entire Suicide Noted podcast is really not at all what I claim it to be. It is just a way for me to do the memoir work. I am waiting for the day, and I tell you, this might be my happiest memory when it happens, or one of them, when a former guest messages me and they say, I actually started my memoir, and the title we talked about is the title I'm using.
Why don't you write everyone's memoir?
This is the memoir! I do titles, and this podcast, this conversation is, I think, kind of a memoir, more of a conversational memoir, but nonetheless, every hour of every day.
Every second of every day.
It is your memoir. If you're asking me, I feel like the smoothest is minute. Every moment of every day, every second of every day, every minute of every day. If you're listening right now, you are getting an inside the VIP room, the back end of genius memoir title creators at work. You're literally, this is something we could like charge thousands of dollars for in a mastermind.
Okay.
No, we're doing it for free. Right now, I'm playing around. Every minute, every moment, every second, every hour. No, I'm going to nix hour.
What about the difference between minute and moment?
Something about minute being a formal actual time measurement.
Okay.
That feels stronger to me. I also think it's slightly less used. Moment is used a lot, but minute is not.
Okay. We'll do that then.
Now, what will the publisher say? I do not know. Wait a second. Are you going to write your memoir?
I don't know what to put. My life is so boring, Sean.
I think that might be the start of it. Where that's the first sentence right there. My life is so boring. I would take out Sean. Who's the editor now, Lucy? I will not write a memoir. I will never write a memoir. Just so you know.
Why would you write your memoir?
Why would I? That's the whole right. Exactly. I wouldn't. What else would you like to share with me, the audience, or questions you have for me? I don't know. Other things.
Just that, again, I feel like sometimes that there's you know, depression can be likened to a terminal illness where I feel that no matter what treatment, no matter what you do, even if there's momentary relief, it just comes back. And at this point, I just feel like it's better just to end it than to deal with the constant medication, the constant treatment that gives you hope just to fail. And I just feel like I don't want to keep burdening my family with my ups and downs and with supporting me. And I know that in the end, even though they assure me that supporting me isn't a burden, I know that after the momentary shock, in the end, it will be better for them to not have to worry about me, because worrying about me all the time is worse than one big worry and then not have to worry at all, just thinking rationally about it.
That's because that's what you do.
That's what I'm trying to do. So while others think that I'm thinking irrationally, I think I'm thinking rationally.
Right. And then they can gaslight the shit out of you if they say, well, that's what crazy people think about themselves. No, not necessarily. That's what very rational people often think too. They're just suffering.
I just feel that talking to people, people say, oh, you just need to reach out and talk to people if you're feeling suicidal with your family. And there's no way I can talk to my family about it. I would just get the biggest guilt trip about it, about the way I feel. How could you feel that way? Don't you know how good you have it? You know, as I told you before, trying to compare yourself to those who have it worse, it doesn't work. You know, then you just feel, not only do you feel depressed, but you feel bad because you know you shouldn't feel depressed compared to those who have it worse. So it just doesn't work. There's just a lot of times there's no way to feel bad about it. And honestly, I can't even talk. I really am scared to even talk to my psychiatrist because I don't want her to, you know, institutionalize me. So I don't even want to tell her. I can't tell her either. So there's nothing I could talk to.
Right.
I'm in a bind. If I tell my psychiatrist, she's going to put me in one of those terrible, you know, she put me in an institution where I'll be in with someone, with people who have every kind of mental illness, and they'll put me in the therapy room where I'll sit in a room where there'll be some therapist talking bullshit for hours a day, and I'll be in there with everybody with every kind of mental illness, and I'll just be falling asleep while they talk. And so I don't want that. So
no, I don't blame you, man. Don't think I've ever asked this question either. There is, in a parallel universe, Lucy in the sky in a parallel universe.
Yes.
She is listening to you. And I'm asking you, do you want to tell her anything?
I tell her that soon this will be all over and I will be joining her in the ether without all this bullshit, and everything will be fine. And that's it.
And that's it. Every minute of every day.
Every minute. There'll be no minute of every day.
More minutes. No more days.
No more minutes. No more days.
Do you feel like you've shared what you wanted to?
Yes.
That's good.
I can't wait, to be honest. I don't want to wake up anymore. So I can't believe I told you all this. So
I didn't even thank you for being here in the first place. So I certainly am thanking you now for...
I cannot tell you how much I enjoyed this. I really enjoyed this conversation. I really did.
Me too. Perfecto. Okay. Thanks again, Lucy. Talk soon.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
As always, thanks so much for listening and all of your support. And special thanks to Lucy in the sky. Thanks, Lucy. If you are a suicide attempt survivor and you'd like to talk, please reach out. Hello@suicidenoted.com on Facebook or Twitter/X@suicidenoted. And you can check the show notes to learn more about this podcast, including our membership. And that is all for episode number 229. Stay strong. Do the best you can. I will talk to you soon.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.